You are listening to The Pulse, Rod Murray's e-learning tech podcast, number 98.
But I still have firecrackers from the 4th of July. Come on, do I really need 6 months to shop? Might as well be Christmas nonstop. Pretty soon they'll be hanging up lights all over town. And it was just last week I finally took mine down. Please, can I get a break for my sake? All I'm asking for is 1 month without a fruitcake. Give me some time to recover from another year of drunken relatives and a pissed off little brother. Singing that stupid Jingle Bell song in the middle of July somehow seems wrong. I still got 5 months to go and I'm already sick of the ho, ho, ho.
Hi, this is Rod Murray. Glad to be back. Well, it's that time of year again. That was a clip from The Christmas Season by Devo Spice. He's a comedy rapper from New Jersey who has become one of the most popular artists on the nationally syndicated Dr. Demento show. I think you'll enjoy it. I'll play the full song at the end of my podcast.
It's Christmas time again.
This podcast is sponsored by Inside Higher Ed, the online source for news, opinion, and jobs for all of higher education. As always, I'll post the links to all that we discuss on my show notes at www.rodspulsepodcast.com.
It's Christmas time again.
Well, let's move on to the main topic today, Mathematica by Wolfram Research. The name of the program, Mathematica, was apparently suggested to the company founder, Steve Wolfram, by Steve Jobs. Steve had just been building Next Computer Company, and around the time that Mathematica was being developed. In fact, the first time I saw Mathematica was on a Next computer at one of the computer shows. Mathematica 1 came out in 1988, and they are currently on version 8. Today, I'll be interviewing Andy Dorsett. He's the Academic Key Account Manager at Wolfram Research. We'll try to answer the questions, what is Mathematica? How about Wolfram Alpha? If you haven't seen that, it's a great program. How are they used? What is the learning curve? Can it be used in disciplines besides math and physics? We'll discuss that and more. So let's get started. Here's my interview with Andy. Andy, thanks so much for agreeing to talk to me and my audience today. A couple of months ago now, when you came out to University of Sciences, I was very impressed with Mathematica. I hadn't taken a look at it personally for quite a while. So why don't you tell my audience a little bit about what Mathematica is?
Well, thank you so much, Rod. It was really nice to come to campus and meet you all and present what's new with Mathematica. We've been around for close to 30 years, probably between 25 and 30 years, and Mathematica is a piece of technical software that is used for all sorts of things in academics, in research, in the commercial world, in government agencies, in medical institutions. To do everything from computing, visualization, presentation of materials, things like specialized sorts of tasks such as image processing or computation in a grid or high-performance computing environment, to even some of the mundane tasks such as having students do homework or creating some sort of outline for whatever you need to do. So it's everything from document creation to beginning, mid-level, high-power computing, visualization. We like to think of it as your all-in-one software program.
When I think of Mathematica, I think of certainly visualizing equations, which is certainly one of your strong suits. What level college courses would it typically be used in?
I would say that the most common college courses we see with heavy use of Mathematica are, of course, your calculus series, calculus 1, 2, and 3, and then probably secondarily, differential equations of all sorts and levels and linear algebra. But that's really just on the math side. We really use all across the board. With a name like Mathematica, you would assume technical sorts of disciplines, but I even have English professors, linguistics professors using Mathematica to, find the number of occurrences of certain verbs in Shakespearean poetry and things like that. Those are, of course, on the small side. Physics, any sort of class that involves statics or mechanics or dynamics, those are prime uses or prime classes for Mathematica. In chemistry, the majority of our chemistry users use it in physical chemistry or that sort of work. Biology professors, I've talked with a lot of biology professors over the past 2 or 3 months, and many that are in the Philadelphia area that have told me they have so much data that they've already cataloged and they have ready to use and analyze. They need a good, strong tool to analyze this data. And a lot of them are looking at Mathematica for statistics, data analysis, cluster sort of work. So any place where there would be any sort of computation or any sort of statistical analysis or data analysis of any kind is where we see Mathematica being used.
I originally wouldn't have thought of Mathematica for statistics because, you know, you hear of other software packages that that are commonly used for that. So this would replace your competing software packages just for use in statistics alone.
We believe so. And we claim that we are the strongest and most robust statistical package on the market today. I wish I had some visuals to show you, but in a podcast, of course, that's not possible. But absolutely, with the it's not just the power of Mathematica, because if a software is powerful and can do a lot of really great and intricate things, but it isn't easy to use, then that power isn't as accessible and isn't as welcome to some people. But we feel with the pairing of Mathematica's very, very easy to use interface and syntax, it makes all the power of computing and statistical analysis, or even any sort of calculus work you need to do, very, very easy and very welcoming to many people.
I think that the thing that's surprising to me and probably other folks is that you mentioned how it can be used in sort of non-mathematical disciplines. You mentioned English and sort of word analysis. Can you give us any other examples of how that might be used in social sciences or, I don't know, art, history, whatever?
Sure. Of course, the majority of our users are in math, physics, economics, biology, and chemistry. I think those are probably, if we're thinking of core subjects beyond engineering, I would say that those are probably the biggest ones. But just a few case studies. Averett University in Southern Virginia, their main users, in fact, nearly all of their users are in the psychology department. In fact, their psychology curriculum revolves around, when it comes to technology use, Mathematica to do any sort of statistical analysis that needs to be done with that work. Temple University and the University of Maryland at Baltimore are a couple of other schools that are using Mathematica in their pharmacy or pharmacology departments to do analysis of different molecules and also the computation that goes along with that too. Other schools like the Wharton School at University of Pennsylvania making wide use of Mathematica in business classes as well. So we think Mathematica, I tell folks, you know, not to think of it as a misnomer, because a lot of people assume it's just for math. But no, there's a huge user base outside of those typical disciplines, for sure.
How difficult is it for, say, a faculty person new to Mathematica to learn the ropes? And what do you offer a new faculty member who wants to start using Mathematica?
I personally believe that it is very easy to begin with Mathematica for many reasons. First of all, from the beginning, our developer, or the president of our company, Stephen Wolfram, created Mathematica with three basic rules to begin using the software, to use the syntax and to create computations or graphs or whatever. And those rules haven't changed. And so we've been very consistent in our 25 plus years of existence as or in Mathematica's, 25 plus years of existence, and that our rules haven't changed. And once people learn these basic rules, you know, they don't have to relearn them or, you know, forget what they knew before. So that's one huge benefit that has always been with us and isn't going to go away anytime soon. In addition, I'm sure that you and many of your listeners have seen the website wolframalpha.com.
Right. I was going to ask you about that. Yeah.
Yes, it's a website. We don't think of it as a search engine like Google. We think of it as a computational knowledge engine built with the power of Mathematica, actually Web Mathematica, one of our other products, to do live computation on the web using the power of Mathematica and a lot of the data that we've collected and curated on our site. So the idea behind Wolfram Alpha is you don't need to know a lot about how to type things in Mathematica syntax to get great Mathematica type answers. And that capability has been put inside of Mathematica, our core product, now standard. So a professor that is brand new to Mathematica and that needs to do things with Mathematica can just open up a Mathematica notebook, type the equals sign, and then type their question as if they're at wolframalpha.com. So if they wanted to, you know, do a plot of, I don't know, x squared plus 3, they would just type in equals plot x squared plus 3. They could even type those words out without any numbers. And with an internet connection, the Mathematica notebook, Mathematica will talk to our servers to interpret the language, pull in for you that information, along with a lot of additional information as well, to return for you the outcome that you're looking for. So literally, all you need to know anymore is to hit equal sign and to have an internet connection, and you can do a lot of the work you need to do. Also, inside of Mathematica, we have a lot of what we call palettes. They're point and click menus for the user that maybe doesn't have an internet connection at the moment or really likes the availability of just being able to point and click and get a menu together, maybe just a command where you can fill in blanks. You know, that capability is there. So in my opinion, for every specific taste of how a professor likes to get started or wants to learn a software, Mathematica has that to offer. So I always say, people talked about a learning curve in earlier versions, and with the Wolfram Alpha capability, we call it free-form linguistic input. With that built into Mathematica, with the available palettes and with the consistency of our syntax, I would make the case that our learning curve is nearly gone now.
One of my favorite things to show folks on my iPad or my iPhone is Wolfram Alpha. I mean, that's just an incredible resource. It gives you ready access to a wealth of data that you could use in many different disciplines.
Right. One topic I really like to show is that Alpha likes to make some assumptions. Of course, we have to assume what you're talking about at first, but one query that we like to show is, going to Wolfram Alpha and typing in biggest country in Europe. The reason why we show that is, of course, the word biggest is a bit ambiguous. What do we mean by biggest? The, land area, population, or, GDP, we're kind of unspecific or vague, I should say, when we start. But that's okay because Wolfram Alpha pulls in all sorts of assumptions. It assumes one thing to begin with, usually land area. There are other choices for choosing population or GDP. And so it pulls in all this information, assuming many different things about what you're trying to say. So, giving you a wide array of information.
One of the things that I was very intrigued with when you gave a presentation here at New Sciences was the ability to create, do you call it a program or some sort of a module that then you can put out on the web, a sort of a pre-formatted calculation of some kind that folks can access from the web?
Yes, there's a function in Mathematica called manipulate. It allows the user to make an interactive model with sliders that move in real time in the model and buttons you can click on if you use the right, sorts of commands and syntax. We call them interactive models, and those are available. I think we have just about 7,500 of them available on one of our websites. It's demonstrations.wolfram.com. And the great thing about this is you can run these demonstrations and use them for classes or use them to help you in your research or demonstrate things to colleagues, in the business world that you work with without having Mathematica. You can use them as is. Our developers have created what's called a CDF player. I know many of your listeners are familiar with, Adobe Reader, where you can, you're not creating a PDF, you're just looking at it. It's kind of our answer to that. It allows you to look at something that somebody has made in Mathematica, but even more than just looking at it, you can interact with it using the sliders that are in the model and buttons you can click on. You can't change any code or modify it unless you have Mathematica, but it's a great way to use what's already there. If you really like this demonstration about, different volatility of certain elements in chemistry, there's an interactive model for that. You can show that to your classes, or you can have your students create this model and save it as a CDF document so that as they do presentations or maybe they want to make some sort of live resume when they go out to their job, you know, they don't have to have full Mathematica on the machine where they're presenting from. They can just have the CDF player to present what they've created in Mathematica.
Very neat. One of the topics I still teach is pharmacokinetics, and I'd used some proprietary software in the past to look at pharmacokinetic models. I assume people have used Mathematica for that. I should probably look into it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure there are some interactive models at demonstrations.wolfram.com that would interest you.
Yeah, I'll be sure to put the URL you just mentioned in my show notes so people can follow up with that. I guess before we end, I think it would be also good to let our audience know how it works at an institution like ours. Not that you have to get into specific pricing, but is it a concurrent license, a universal license for campus? How does the licensing actually work?
There are plenty of different models that we give because I know the different universities have different needs. And what works for one school doesn't always work for another school. So we completely understand that. The type of license that the University of Sciences has is a concurrent licensing model. The installation is unlimited on campus. There is one license manager that comes with the license that you would purchase that monitors and makes sure that no more than a set number of people can use it at a time. Other schools, like I mentioned, University of Pennsylvania, Temple University, they have what are called unlimited licenses. And what that means is they can have an unlimited number of network or concurrent installations or single machine installations and of any size and of any sort of expanses they need. It just depends on what the needs are of the school. With every site license that we sell to a school, you have the capability to do image processing if you're a physics person or if you're in computer science and do that sort of work, or even chemistry. I think there could be some use there. Also, grid computing, the mechanism to set that up, whether it's on a dedicated cluster that a school has or in an ad hoc environment where you take the computer labs and hook them together and have them do large calculations for you overnight when they're not being used. You know, all that is together with a site license that comes with the schools.
Yeah, you did anticipate one of my last questions, of course, which is what runs the code? And I remember years ago, some pricing models, I think, you know, it depended on how many CPUs you were running to crunch the data, but that would be kind of limiting. So that's nice to know that you could mount it on a cluster. Is there anything else you would like to let us know about your roadmap? Any new features or functionality or new versions coming down the pike?
Sure. I can give you a bit of a trend of how things have gone in the past. We're at version 8 now, and the biggest deal with our version 8 release a couple of years ago was the inclusion of the freeform linguistic input, as well as a lot of the higher end math and science capabilities. You know, statistics had a huge boost in version 8. Control systems for your electrical engineering or mechanical engineering people, that's included now. Wavelet Explorer technology for neuroscience and physics people. So with version 8, we boosted our high-end capabilities even beyond what they were. There are refinements that will be made to the CDF process. Products for mobile devices are growing in depth and breadth as well. Mathematica is not yet available for the iPad or the iPod, but we have a lot of mobile apps that, you know, like the Wolfram Alpha app that you mentioned for the iPad. We have a lot of course assistant apps for extra help for Calc 1, 2, or 3, or music theory, or chemistry, or advanced physics with Mathematica technology and specific functionality for that subject. Those are all available, you know, I believe for the Android as well as for the iPhone and iPad products as well. So we've been on the cusp of innovation of all the softwares for years now. So I'm very excited to see what the future holds for Mathematica 9.
Well, great. That's a great summary of Mathematica, and best wishes for the new year, and thanks again.
Thank you so much, Rod. I'm glad to be on here. Thank you so much.
Well, as you can see, Mathematica can be used in many ways. Even if you don't teach math or physics, you may find it to be a great teaching and research tool. Follow the links in my show notes at rodspulsepodcast.com. So please stay tuned for the Christmas season, and until next time, have a great holiday and Happy New Year, too.
Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming, Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming, Christmas is coming, now Christmas is coming, ah, crap!
look a lot like Christmas already, with the animated reindeer in the top hat wearing Yeti. Now I can be as festive as the next guy, but I still have firecrackers from the 4th of July. Come on, do I really need 6 months to shop? Might as well be Christmas nonstop. Pretty soon they'll be hanging up lights all over town, and it was just last week I finally took mine down. Please, can I get a break for my sake? All I'm asking for is 1 month without a fruitcake. Give me some time to recover from another year of drunken relatives and a pissed off little brother. Singing that stupid Jingle Bell song in the middle of July somehow seems wrong. I still got 5 months to go, and I'm already sick of the ho, ho, ho.
It's Christmas time again.
Let's see what's on TV.
It's Christmas time again.
Well, we got Rudolph, Frosty.
It's Christmas time again.
Rudolph versus Frosty.
It's Christmas time again.
A CSI Christmas.
The Christmas season causes great frustration, getting longer and harder like a Viagra patient. I just need a vacation from the holiday cheer, and I don't think that I can take it for the rest of the year. And nobody is cheerful anyway. It's always give me the damn toys and get the fuck out my way. I can deal with that on December 23rd, but when it starts up in March, that's a little absurd. And then the charities, there's way too many begging me for money like I have any. And there's some idiot flapping his mouth like a flapjack with his peace on earth and all that crap. I'd settle for peace in the kitchen, but that would mean my relatives would have to quit their bitching. And since I doubt that'll ever come about, it's Merry Christmas, pass the gravy, and I try to tune them out.
It's Christmas time again.
Alright, let's see what Santa brought for me.
It's Christmas time again.
Huh, I already have one of these.
It's Christmas time again.
Hey, wait a minute, this is mine.
It's Christmas time again.
I've been looking for this.
Christmas usually consists of this: fighting back the urge to shop with my fist, sending out cards to people I never see, and trying to keep the dog from peeing on the tree. And then the whole family has to search for directions so we can find our way to church. I still find it ironic and a little bit odd that my kids believe in Santa Claus but not in God. But I ain't taking my kids, cause it's too weird to see some child molester in a fake beard. I don't care if they kick and scream, I ain't doing anything till after Halloween. I can only buy damaged and discount due to the amount in my bank account. But I have no motivation to shop when I know I'm still paying off gifts from 3 Christmases ago.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
And again, and again, and again, and again.
It's Christmas time again.
What do you mean again? More like still.
That's it for today's episode. Thank you very much for listening. Don't forget to give Rod feedback. You can leave comments on his blog, send email to rod@rodspulsepodcast.com, or leave audio feedback on his comment line at 610-616-2199. The preceding audio commentary is the product of the author, Dr. Rodney Murray, and does not represent the official viewpoint of the University of the Sciences or any other institution or company.